This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Baseball is in full swing. NBA playoffs are heating up, and your NFL team is gearing up for training camp. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
Sports Radio 610 presents In the Loop with John Lopez and Landry Locker.
All right, it's opening day. Astros 10 hours away from starting the season. Let's talk to Adam Spillane, our Astros reporter for Sports Radio 610. Let's just jump right into it, Adam. We'll get into the overall outlook of the 2021 season. But before we do, I just want to ask you, how would you handle this Carlos Correa situation, or how would you have handled it if you were James Click and Jim Crane?
Well, if I were Jim Crane, I would have tried to get something done years ago and not let it get to this point. I think that James Click was put in a really tough situation with this thing, just because when you listen to Correa talk, and this is back at the start of spring training, you have the five shortstops who are about to be free agents. You have Correa, Lindor, Story, Baez, and Seager. And Correa puts himself in Lindor 1-2, and then it's everybody else after them. And when you go by the totality of their careers, Correa's right. I mean, you go by wins above replacement, it's Lindor at 28, Correa's at 27, and then you've got Story at 23, and then Baez and Seager are in the teens. But the last 3 years, Correa has basically been the fifth of those guys. He's fourth in wins above replacement, and the only reason why he's ahead of Seager is because Seager missed an entire season. So 2015 to 2017, Carlos Correa is an elite player, one of the best players in the game. The last 3 years, he's been above average, and he wants to be paid like the elite guy that he thinks he is. So the Astros, I think, are a little wary of that right now, and I think that this is probably going to go. They're probably going to have him play out the season and go from there. So from a business sense, I think the Astros are doing what they have to do.
You know, Jim Crane is not averse to writing the big checks. And I like your point on they should have done this at least a couple of years ago. But the $20 million offer, was that more of a statement to Correa about what you just said? Because that really, truly, especially when you consider recent contracts, it's kind of insulting. I mean, I know it sounds weird, but it's kind of insulting.
Yeah, it's not a good offer. Frankly, it wasn't a good offer. And I think the 6 years was not a good offer either. Just because you look at the direction that some of these contracts are going, especially with position players, they're signing 10-year deals. They're signing 12-year deals. They basically want their careers settled when it comes to contracts. And so with 6 years, you're putting Correa back on the market when he's 33, and there's basically no point to that. So, yeah, the offer in general, it was not a good offer. He was never going to take the offer, and I think they knew that at the time. And it almost feels like that it set the negotiations back, where they gave him an offer that he knew he wasn't going to take, and it almost feels like he believes that they're wasting his time with this whole thing. So you almost would have rather them not made an offer than to make a bad offer like that one.
Adam Spillane joining us, one of the best baseball minds in town, sportsradio610.com's own, about 10 hours away from the deadline to reach a deal with Correa and the start of the Astros 2021 season. I want to start with the arms, the rotation of the Astros, and I want to start with more of the veteran outlook instead of the young guys. What do you expect, and this is a dangerous thing to ask, what do you expect from Zach Greinke, and then what do you expect from McCullers the second year off Tommy John, and then Odorizzi?
So we'll start with Greinke. I think you will probably see a very similar season to what he had last year. I think he understands where he's at in his career. He understands his body and his arm better than anyone. His velocity, I believe, is up just a little bit during spring training. And I do think that the quick ramp up to last season hurt him. And he even talked about how He was in the trainer's room a lot more last season than he ever had been in his career. So I think having the offseason to get his body right, to get his arm right, will really help him. The thing with him, it's just going to be about consistency, because as we saw last year, when his command isn't spot on, he's going to get hit a little bit just because he's going to make mistakes, you know, at the top of the strike zone at 88, 89 miles an hour. And that's how you're going to get hit hard in with the way the game is being played right now. So for him, it's just going to be about consistency. It's going to be about command and taking care of his arm. The big thing for him right now is his slider. He's not happy with where it's at right now, but he is happy with all of his other pitches. And it, to me, it feels like he is happier with where he's at right now than where he was when last season started, and I think that's important. McCullers, to me, I think is primed to have a monster season. He's healthy. Like you said, it's now he's had more time off of Tommy John surgery. The velocity is up from where it was last season. He's still trying to get consistency with some of his secondary pitches, but that's, you know, to be expected. The cutter, I think, was the big pitch that he had been talking about trying to work on. The curveball has been a little bit shaky during spring training, but I think that, and I don't know what the numbers were, but I think he was just excellent during spring, and spring training numbers don't mean a ton, but it does give you a little bit of an indication of where he's at physically. And then with Oda Rizzi, I think that his case is really interesting. I thought that the start on Monday was really good. He's unique to a lot of pitchers that they've had in the past, where he's not a breaking ball guy. He's fastball, he's splitter, he's cutter, more than anything else. The velocity, he says, is where he wants it to be. He's going to make a start, or he's going to pitch in Corpus Christi on Saturday, then again on the 8th, and then it looks like he'll be ready to join the big league staff for that Detroit series during that first homestand. He's not going to, I don't think he's going to wow you or thrill you or put up any type of Cy Young numbers, but I think he stabilizes the rotation. And I think you need a stabilizer in your rotation when you consider that you have to try and figure out how to get 162 games out of this staff when you only needed 60 last year. And that's really going to, I think the Astros are going to have this, and everyone's going to have this, where it's going to be really difficult to try and get by with starting pitchers because of just how much more of a load they have to carry this season than they did last year.
Talking to Adam Spillane, previewing the Astros here on Sports Radio 6. And I want to go to the young guys now and the young arms, and I want to kind of take it into the bullpen as well. Jose Urquidy, we saw Urquidy 2 years ago pitch pretty well in the postseason. And then last year, obviously, the COVID kind of held him up. He was basically in a hotel room for damn near a month. What do you think of Urquidy, and what do you think about guys like Javier on the back end of the rotation, and then the Taylors and the Paredeses, who last year they looked good in their first year, but you can almost make a case that without fans and without teams getting a look at them, it was almost like I don't want to say an advantage because you still got to get guys out, but it was almost like as much of an advantage as they'll have as youngsters in their career.
Yeah, with the young guys, I do think that it helps them that they will get eased into playing in front of fans in big league parks, where you're not going to be playing in front of 40,000 people. Tonight in Oakland, they're going to play in front of, I think it's 12,000 is the number. At Minute Maid, they'll play in front of 20-something thousand, at least for the first month. So I do think that helps them. I love Paredes. I love the arm. I love the makeup. I love the secondary stuff. So I think that guy is primed to have a really big year as a late inning guy. And the good thing with what they did in the offseason is that there's a little bit of, you know, there are other high leverage guys. He's not going to be relied on as essentially one of the only high leverage guys in the bullpen. You've got Presley, you've got Ryan Stanek back there, Pedro Baez once he's healthy. So I do think that will help him. And actually, I think Baez is going to help him a lot as, you know, another Latin guy in that bullpen. Taylor is interesting just because he's not a stuff guy. You know, Paredes is a stuff guy. He's a guy who throws 98. Taylor isn't like that. So you need a little bit of deception with him, but he's a good left-handed arm who pitched well for them when they needed him to. You go to the starters. I think possibly the key to their 2021 season, I think it's going to be Javier, and I think it's going to be Urquidy. I think they're going to need those guys to be healthy. They're going to need those guys to be effective. And there's no reason to think that they won't be. I think Javier was better than anyone could have ever imagined. And he was the guy who, I think he went into spring training last year as someone who, you know, might make the team, might not make the team. And then because of all the injuries, he gets pressed into a significant role, and he was great for them. He was great for them as a starter. He was great for them as a bulk, as a reliever when they needed him during postseason. So I think that versatility helps. And then I think Urquidy is one of their guys moving forward. You saw him pitch really well in tough situations in 2019. And then last year, once he was available, he was really good for them. And I think the toughest part with Urquidy is that he just didn't throw very many innings last year. So he has to go from, you know, whatever his inning total was in 2019, where it was well over 100, to when you drop down into probably 30 last year, and now you're asking him to throw 150, 160 innings this year. So I think that's going to be the toughest part for him.
All right, one more big thing here before we let you go, because let's talk about the division. I saw one of the, I think it was Chapman, was already throwing some volleys at the Astros, saying they're going to have to prove it this morning on Twitter. What is the division race gonna be like, and how much of it hinges on Yordan?
So the other four teams, I think Texas and Seattle are going to be pretty bad. They are still clearly in rebuild mode, and it feels like the Rangers are just kind of in the beginning stages of their rebuild. Oakland got worse from last year. You lose Hendricks, who is probably their best reliever, and then you lose Simeon and replace him with Elvis Andrus. I mean, that's taking a step down in those two spots. And it is very possible that the A's start selling guys off too at some point during the season if they don't get off to a good start, and Chapman could be one of those guys. The Angels, I think, are a really interesting team just because they've got the star power, and they've got the best player in the game in Mike Trout. Anthony Rendon is probably a top five position player. And Shohei Ohtani was very good during spring training. He was good both at the plate and on the mound. And that's something that they haven't had the last couple of years. So if they can get anything out of their rotation, and they signed Jose Quintana, they traded for Raisel Iglesias as their ninth inning guy. So if they can get anything out of that pitching staff, that could be a dangerous team moving forward. To me, the Astros are still the best team in the division. Bringing back Alvarez obviously helps with the loss of Springer. I think Miles Straw will be fine in center field. I don't think he's as good a defender as Springer. I don't think he obviously isn't the same hitter that Springer is, but putting Alvarez in there lessens the blow of Springer. And then you have to hope that Altuve and Bregman and that those two guys and Gurriel have bounce back years. You don't need them to be back to 2019 form, but if they can be 5 to 10% better than they were last year, which I don't think is asking for a ton, then it puts them in a really good position where the lineup is still really, really good. The key for them is going to be health, because depth-wise, especially when it comes to the position players, they have very little.
Spo, I'm going to get you out of here on this. I'm going to put you on the spot, because I think we take the lineup for granted. We just assume it's going to be very good. Where will the Astros lineup rank overall in all of baseball in 2021?
I think it'll be top 10.
Okay.
I think it'll be top 10. I'm not willing to put them back up into that top three, top five just yet, but I think that it'll be a no problem top 10, which I think puts them at the, you know, 88 win range. But if they can get into that top five range once again, then they can win, you know, 90 something games again.
It just feels a little different this year, Spo. I'm hoping that one thing that changes this year compared to last is that this game doesn't end at 2 a.m. tonight. I'm hoping.
Yeah.
But I just jinxed it.
It doesn't help that it's that we're back to 9 p.m. games on the West and not those nice 8 p.m. games like last year. So get ready for those late night games again.
Adam, you're the best. Appreciate you, man.
Sure thing, guys. Take care.
All right, man. Adam Spillane. What a baseball mind. I could just listen to that rotation breakdown.
Good talking.
I was going to try to get to the middle reliever. Well, this guy talks about marijuana.
He touched on it a little bit. Rock and roll, Taylor and such. Marijuana, we would scorn. Wait,
okay.
What? He would scorn it.
Oh.
Marijuana bad. Baseball good.
Okay. Landry Locker, John Lopez, Figgy Fig. Deshaun Watson's got some strange support coming from 305. I don't know if this guy went on a coke binge and
on
then
who?
Decided to talk about Deshaun Watson, but Deshaun Watson has a lot of support. Well, I guess a little support from a man in the city where John Lopez thinks Deshaun is destined to go 4 weeks from now. You'll hear it next.
Hank Aaron was beginning.
Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents In the Loop with John Lopez and Landry Locker.
Rusty Harden has countered Tony Busby's skepticism about the HPD. We'll give that to you in 20 minutes. But Sean Watson has some interesting support from the 305. I don't know much about this guy. I just know he's a radio guy. I know he tweets a lot, and I know he seems like kind of a nut job, to be 100% honest with you. You might be more familiar with him. Apparently, he's on the Canes Football NFL Wall of Fame. Dan Cilio?
Cilio, yeah.
Is this dude a nut job or something?
He can be. He's wired a little differently.
This is Dan Cilio, who's one of the most, I guess, outspoken guys that represents that Miami region. We have forecasted that in 4 weeks, NFL draft, by the way, 4 weeks away. You want to talk about excitement. That Deshaun Watson could very well head to Miami within the next 4 weeks. If he does, Dan Cilio, who supports the Miami Dolphins, appears to be on board regardless of any looming legal issues with Deshaun Watson. This is Dan Cilio talking about Deshaun Watson.
All right, here's your boy Cilio here, and I'm going to give you my spin on this Deshaun Watson case. I don't believe one second of it. Where's the criminal charges? Not one. The attorney, Tony Busby, won't turn over the names. They're all Jane Doe's. Until you have a criminal complaint, I tell you this, if my daughter was being sexually molested and this guy was sexually assaulting them, I wouldn't give a f*** about what kind of money was on the table. I would care about justice, and if I didn't get it, I'd beat the hell out of the guy.
Right.
What are we talking about here? A smear campaign. I'm not buying it, okay? Until you show me civil anybody can file that, then guess what? I'm 100% behind Deshaun Watson. That's big sales.
All right, Big Sill.
Big Sill.
Dan Cilio.
He calls himself your boy and Big Sill.
He is
a big dude.
I've heard someone sign on the radio before and say, hey, it's your boy.
Well, that's true. That's true. But Big Sill.
I have heard it. It's your boy.
Yeah.
Blah, blah, blah.
Hey, it's Rick Kamla.
Yes, that guy. I have heard it. But that's the support from Dan Cilio. Now he is somewhat of a loon.
He's tightly wound.
But the only reason I play that is because obviously that's the extreme side of things, and it's not really. It's more just a. I just wanted to play a negative stereotype of Miami because when I think of Meathead Miami, that's kind of what I think of. I do think that if there is a battle going on in the public in this case between Deshaun Watson's team and Tony Busby, I do feel like there's been a little bit of a shift. Mm-hmm. I don't know what the next play is for Tony Busby, but I do feel like the momentum at least appears to be in the public perception, which really doesn't matter in the big scheme of things when it comes to the legal game. But I do feel like there is somewhat of a shift in maybe skepticism isn't the right word, but there is at least a shift of, okay, what is this Tony Busby up to? What are his motives? Are there ulterior motives with Tony Busby? Why doesn't he trust the police? Why did he initially say that he trusted the police? I do feel like just from a public perception, I could be wrong because we all have different timelines. We all talk to different people. But I do feel like there's like at least in the middle, I feel like it's at the very least shifting to the middle.
First of all, let's eliminate Dan Cilio's craziness.
Yes.
There's not going to be 21 women who are putting their jobs on their line and their reputations on the line for a smear campaign, okay? He's the extreme on one way. The extreme on the other way is this guy did it, and, you know, everybody jumping to conclusions like that. You can't go that far on either side, okay? But I will say this. Both mega attorneys, I feel, have made some miscalculations here. You know, they're smarter than me, so maybe they know what they're doing. I think in Tony Busby's case, it fits his persona, it fits his approach, doesn't quite fit Rusty Harden's. And I think that's why Tony Busby, while you're right, I think the public sentiment toward Busby has shifted. I don't think the public sentiment has shifted toward Deshaun Watson's defense. I think people are still even more so like just shaking their head. And if they had to court of opinion, take it to a jury, I think Deshaun would not fare well.
No, I mean, when you're Deshaun, and you got to think about what we thought about Deshaun Watson and what it seemed like a lot of people thought about Deshaun Watson before all of this.
Yes,
people did not think that this would even be a possibility, that Deshaun Watson would be linked into something like this. So that in itself kind of falls into the court of public opinion shifting with Deshaun Watson. But with the way that this is just going, and the way that the back and forth has gone, I truly think there, what did I say last week? I said 2 weeks there'll be a settlement. I think it's going to be 2.5 weeks. And I think if Tony Busby had the confidence that there would be criminal charges pressed, then I think that this could be drag on even longer. But I think the fact, and I agree with Attorney Sam yesterday when he said what he said, I think the fact that Busby is already basically questioning the integrity of the Houston Police Department, I think that might show you that he's not as confident as he initially was that criminal charges are going to be pressed against Deshaun Watson.
And it could have just been bluster. He doesn't care about criminal charges. If you really want to give him truth serum, he's here for the 21 civil cases. That's what he's hired to do. So I mentioned earlier some of the miscalculations, in my opinion, that both sides have done. I think his first miscalculation, and it was bluster. It was just throwing stuff out there to make people want to believe that he's right and all these women were wronged, was saying, I'm going to take it to the authorities. They have my full cooperation. I'll turn over, whatever. Well, then he waited and waited and waited and waited and waited and heard from Rusty Hardin about that. That was one miscalculation. Then he did this latest one, disparaging the name of people in the Houston Police Department and naming, not saying, but just saying Rusty Hardin's son. That was another miscalculation. Rusty Hardin is kind of getting swept up in it, and I think he's made some mistakes himself, particularly yesterday. I thought Rusty Hardin fared well today in his statement, talking about this is, he was really, really direct. That was Rusty Hardin at his best, just making, a direct point, a direct hit at Tony Busby. But yesterday, man, I after sleeping on it and everything else, when you got a guy that your opposing counsel is trying to portray him as someone who is just has a problem, is over the top trying to get these massage therapists to do more, and you're trying to defend that, you don't give him 18 more massage therapists. And then on top of the SI one, that counts 40.
But they've only acknowledged 18. And I don't know how many is too many, but he could have 79, he could have 600 massage therapists. And if 600 say that he's nothing but professional, I think that's all that matters. The 21 is just the defense saying that they were set up as massages. So I don't know why the number matters.
The plaintiff.
Yeah. The plaintiffs. That to me is kind of unfair, because it doesn't matter if he has 968 massage therapists, if they all say he's okay, but he's acknowledged 18, and the 18 have spoken favorably of Deshaun Watson. We only know that the plaintiffs are claiming that all of these encounters were set up by massages. So if we take that on the surface and we automatically assume that that's how these meetings were set up, then how do you pick and choose what you believe in these cases, because I think you got to let them play out.
Here's the problem. You lend credence to that assumption.
How is it credence, though?
I'll tell you. You just said in your opinion that that's fair. We haven't heard from Rusty acknowledging that those 21 are massages or were set up as massages. That's fair. Absolutely. So why give him 18 who were? Because in the court of public opinion, everybody's going to say, see there, 18 more. And guess what? Everybody is saying, see there, 18 more. So if you're saying you should, that's where I think Rusty kind of slipped up. If your defense is going to be what you were, this was just, hookups. This was just meeting someone on Instagram and one thing led to another, and it was consensual sex. Why are you giving him 18 true massage therapists in your own words? I thought that was a miscalculation.
How is that a negative?
But because they're trying to say these are 21 massage therapists that they thought it was just going to be massage, and he led it to something else.
Okay.
If you're trying to say, no, those were not, Why are you giving him true 18 verified, in your own words, massage therapists? Because in the court of public opinion, people are going to jump to the conclusion, and they have. Okay, so 21 plus 18 plus the one from Sports Illustrated, Deshaun Watson has gone to 40 massage therapists. It might not be true. You might be right. But you're giving more credence to it by giving him 18 massage therapists.
But if they're legit massage, like let's say
it doesn't matter if they're legit or not.
But I feel like the fact that people are assuming that, I feel like it's just almost like an added perception of the way people look at massages. Because let's just say that the defense was saying he set this up at restaurants and he hit on waitresses and stuff went bad. If he then had 18 different waitresses come and say that he was very polite and nothing happened, would that look negative too? Like, what? Why is it so bad that it's massages? If it's a favorable experience, it's a professional experience. Why does it matter? Especially when we don't know for a fact.
Because you're saying it wasn't a massage therapist, and then you're giving him massage therapist, and people are going to automatically assume the 21 were too, which they do anyway. But it just lends more credence to it. You know what I mean? It goes back, and then on your second point there, it goes back to what I said yesterday. If you rob 21 banks and the defense says, well, here are 18 banks he didn't rob, doesn't have to do with those 18 banks he didn't rob. It has to do with those 21 banks that he robbed.
Landry Locker, John Lopez, Figgy Fig with you here on Houston Sports Leader, Sports Radio 610. Coming up, the hits are lit. The latest on Carlos Correa, the statement from Rusty Harden, and oh my gosh, it is opening day, one of the best days of the year. Next.
Playing all the hits. These are the hot stories of the day. Presented by BaywayLincoln.com. You're in the loop with Houston's sports leader, Sports Radio 610.
All right, here's the Rusty Harden response to Tony Busby and his lack of trust for the HPD. Quote, since March 19th, Mr. Tony Busby has repeatedly promised to submit evidence to the Houston Police Department in support of his anonymous client's complaints against Deshaun Watson. So far, he has not done so. Now, in response to media inquiries, Mr. Busby has abandoned his promise altogether and, in his words, will go elsewhere to provide his evidence to investigative authorities. His latest excuse for failing to go to law enforcement is also his lamest. Anyone who has dealt with HPD, as I have for many years, would know that Mr. Busby's suggestion that the department would overlook legitimate complaints based upon a family connection of one of its officers is ludicrous. It is also insulting to the dedicated professionals at the HPD and to common sense. Mr. Busby's claimed fear of HPD's partiality is inconsistent with his prior praise for the department's response to the burglary of his home during his recent campaign. I would respectfully suggest that Mr. Busby's failure to go to law enforcement does not result from some baseless fear that HPD will not fairly investigate. Instead, it is from the knowledge that his parade of anonymous allegations could not survive the rigorous inquiry of trained investigators or the need to attest to the truth of the allegations under oath. For our part, we will continue to learn about the cases in any way that we can. We and Deshaun will always remain available to any law enforcement or regulatory agency who desires our cooperation. Apparently, Mr. Busby is unwilling to do the same.
Let's make this very clear as well. Obviously, Rusty Harden is Deshaun Watson's counsel. He doesn't want this to go to the criminal investigation. Why would you? You're defending Deshaun Watson, and you're kind of saying, see there, he didn't have any evidence to go to the Houston Police Department. So he's actually not using this. He's using this for his civil defense. You know, he's not daring you to go. I dare you to go ahead and go, because that's just either more trouble and more work for Rusty Harden. So this is all about putting stuff out there publicly. Whatever you can do, I can do better. And they're both saying it, and they're both coming at each other.
Landry Locker, John Lopez, Figgy Fig with you here on Houston Sports Leader, Sports Radio 610. Here was what Busby said originally when it came to how he was going to handle the authority. So I don't know what exactly has changed. I mean, Acevedo leaving, you think, would actually increase
right.
his willingness to do this. But this was him at his original press conference, Tony Busby, talking about how he was going to handle this from a criminal standpoint.
I've informally been contacted by the Houston Police Department. It is our intention for the clients that are willing to do so to put together a package and to submit it to the Houston Police Department of the information that we have.
There you go. So I guess that's changed skepticism, and there's a lot of skepticism around court of public opinion spinning like crazy. This was Attorney Sam. Shout out to the Loopholes. If you listen, you are one. Attorney Sam, a practicing attorney. This was him talking about his reaction to the Busby strategy against the police. And keep in mind, Attorney Sam was actually somewhat praising the approach by Tony Busby early on. But this was his reaction to what happened two nights ago.
I'm shocked, but then I'm not shocked. And I think it's kind of classless, to be honest with you. But again, like I talked about last week with you guys, man, he's playing in the mud. And I think this was a preemptive strike to get us prepared for, hey, there will be no criminal case brought. And what he's trying to do, from my standpoint, and I could be wrong, from where I sit, it seems to me he's trying to prepare us for there to be no criminal investigation, no criminal cases filed, and to say, you know, the scapegoat, basically.
Yeah. And there's, you know, in terms of what it takes to get a settlement, Tony Busby isn't above that. The Attorney Sam is right, but it comes down to, is he going to be able to get a settlement, or is he going to win in civil court? And that's all Tony Busby cares about.
It'll be
about. Interesting.
I will say this. When it comes to the statements, Rusty Harden's appear to be much more professional than Tony Busby's late-night
Facebook
posts.
Although he did
Facebook
say this is
posts.
The lamest.
I like that. I like that one. I'm just talking about from a actually being able to read standpoint. Deshaun Watson, still the QB for the Texans as of right now. We are 4 weeks away from the NFL draft. Who knows what's going to happen? David Culley was on the Huddle and Flow podcast, and this is what David Culley said a couple weeks ago about Deshaun Watson's status.
He is our starting quarterback as of right now. He is our starting quarterback. Things happen between now and then, and then we'll see what happens.
Just he open the right door now. Right now. You've been around, because, Coach. You know better.
He is our starting quarterback.
Right
okay.
now.
Mm-hmm. That's right, right now, and hopefully in the future.
All right, so that was David Culley before any of this legal stuff even happened. Here's Nick Caserio talking about the status of Deshaun Watson on the Albert Breer Show after this legal stuff had started happening.
I think the legal process is kind of a separate entity. That's a pretty active situation. So, you know, we'll leave that to, you know, to the authorities from that perspective. I mean, we're kind of day to day with everything, with everybody. From the beginning, since I've taken the job to now, we've had a lot of change, and there's been a lot of activity. I would suspect, you know, as we work towards the start of training camp and into the regular season, that will continually have some adjustments and changes to the roster. What those look like, what that entails, we're just kind of going through it one day at a time and trying to get ready for the next phase of potentially what we think is the offseason. So that's kind of what I would say just as it pertains to that situation.
There you go. So you have the coach before this even happened, and then you have the GM after all this stuff started happening.
Yeah, and Culley was the first to really kind of give you an indication that they were going to...
Got too comfortable.
Yeah, that you were
going to... Got too comfortable.
What they were doing. He did. I mean, he was in a very comfortable place with them. And Caserio, very, very much the same case with Albert Breer. He knows him very, very well from the days in New England for decades maybe, but certainly for years. And he was just very honest. I mean, look, we hadn't heard anything like what Nick Caserio said. Not even close. We heard the exact opposite from him. So it's clear they're sort of laying the groundwork, setting the stage, whatever cliche you want to use to make this trade.
4 weeks. That's how long we got until the draft. And then after that, if the draft comes and goes day one, then oh my gosh, who knows what's going to happen with Deshaun Watson. Might make sense to hold on to him for a little bit longer.
At least till June.
And then all of a sudden we start talking holdouts. We start talking about all that. Basically, the standoff resumes in 4 days, or 4 weeks, I should say. Tonight, Astros, 9:07 first pitch. Zach Greinke on the mound. It is opening day. 12:35, the landlock storylines. Going to throw them at you in an entertaining way. Here's Zach Greinke on the excitement of starting on opening day.
Not really. Never cared about it. Still don't care about it.
People are already lining up.
I guess it gives you a chance to make – it gives you a better chance of making more starts during the season. So that's about the main positive about it for me, is you got a better chance of making 32, 33, or 34, or 35 starts.
Okay. Sound excited. What about these new baseballs, though? You've been doing this for dang near two decades. Now all of a sudden you're going to have to throw new baseballs. The baseballs are changing. How do you feel about that, Zach?
Whatever they do, it's fine with me. I was going to say something about it. Nothing too interesting.
Okay. There you go.
This guy knows how to sell tickets, man.
Lord. Can't
he
wait
knows
to watch
how to sell those ducats.
It's always going to be a roller coaster ride with Zach Greinke. We'll see what happens. 9:07 first pitch. Baseball is back. There's also a countdown to whether or not Carlos Correa is going to be extended. The deadline, according to Carlos Correa, is as soon as that first pitch is thrown tonight at 9:07. No more negotiations, according to Carlos Correa. Here's a couple of his teammates and Dusty Baker weighing in on that, starting with Jose Altuve.
Carlos means a lot for the team. One of the best, big part of who we are. He's like brother for me and great guy.
Okay, great guy. Here's Alex Bregman, the baseball messiah, talking about Los.
Carlos has meant so much to this team. And yeah, I mean, we were in the same draft class out of high school. We're the same age, so playing the left side together. So I don't really talk about other people's negotiations. I just want the best for him.
You know, it is interesting. They didn't get into specifics like you got to pay this guy. But you can tell just the vibe in the clubhouse is such that they wish it had got. Everybody wishes it would have gotten done by now, and it doesn't look like it is, unless he pulls another Michael Brantley, him being Jim Crane, and throws that $300 million check in front of him right before batting practice.
Now it's up to Dusty Baker to be the one to manage that distraction or lack thereof. Not his first rodeo, though. Here's Dusty Baker, toothpicks, sweatbands, ready to go, talking about Carlos Correa potentially playing in a contract year.
I'm going to tell him the same thing that I tell all the young players that I've been with and potential free agents. Just go out there, play effectively, help the team win. Don't worry about the money, because the money will follow if you do all the previous things.
There you go. Very simple.
Great
very
advice.
OG-like. We have an opening day roster for the Houston Astros. The pitchers, there are 13 of them. Brian Abreu makes the big league cut. Brandon Belak, yeah. Man, rough into the season for him last year. Luis Garcia, I think the man with the longest delivery on the team. Zach Greinke, of course, getting the ball today. Christian Javier finished top five in Rookie of the Year voting. He's going to be on the back end of the rotation. Lance McCullers coming off that second year of TJ. Enoli Paredes back into the bullpen. Some electric stuff from him in his second year. Ryan Pressly going to be closing. Hopefully we see Ryan Pressly closer to 2 years ago than last year. Brooks Raley, pride of College Station. Joe Smith, he comes back after opting out during the COVID season. Ryan Stanek, not too familiar with his work, not going to lie. Probably holding it down for until Baez gets healthy. And then you have Blake Taylor and Jose Urquidy. Those are your arms. Catchers, Jason Castro and Martin Maldonado. Going to be interesting to see how this goes. Jason Castro, of course, in his second stint with the club. Left-handed bat at catcher. Yeah. So I don't know how that's going to work. Maldonado played the majority last year, but the left-handed bat at catcher, if he shows that he can hit well, maybe you see Jason Castro take out a chunk of the starts at catcher. Infielders, familiar faces. Jose Altuve, Alex Bregman, Carlos Correa, Yuli Gurriel, Robel Garcia, and then Aledmys Diaz. Garcia really the only one that too many people might not be familiar with. And then your outfielders. Quote, outfielders. Yeah. Yordan Alvarez. Not sure we're going to see him play too much outfield.
I don't know about that.
Michael Effin Brantley, Chaz McCormick, Miles Straw, and Big Tuck. Kyle Tucker. That is your opening day roster for the Stros.
Now look at the opening day lineup and tell me where the outs are.
Miles Straw.
Leading off, obviously, Jose Altuve, then Brantley, then Bregman, then Kyle Tucker batting fourth.
Big Tuck! Four-hole Tuck!
Yep, and then Correa batting fifth. Then Yordan's batting sixth. Yuli is batting seventh. And then Miles Straw and Martin Maldonado. So that might be where it's a little bit, but every lineup is like that. Well, every lineup is not as strong as the first seven, but solid, man.
It's a crazy time to be alive. We have all the Deshaun Watson stuff. We have the Astros going to be on the TV, and then you're going to have the U of H Cougs on your radio right here on Sports Radio 610, 414 tip-off. Going to be a scrappy one. It's going to be two Texas teams. You're going to have the Cougs versus that team from Waco, and local coverage provided by Academy Sports and Outdoors. Academy Sports and Outdoors and Sports Radio 610, your home of Coug basketball in March.
And
well, it's
thoughts.
April now.
It's April.
It's April Madness.
Yes, it's April.
And we call it April Madness.
Thankfully, we haven't seen any of the stupidity on April 1st. But
well, I've seen a lot on the internet.
Have you?
If there's ever a time to eliminate people from your life, look at people who try to pull April Fool's jokes, and it's easy to eliminate them from your life.
Yeah. I thought the Michael Strahan thing was going to be an April Fool's joke, but apparently it's not. You saw what he did?
Closes the gap.
Yeah.
About time.
Big mistake.
That's terrible, man.
Huge mistake.
About time.
That was his brand.
Yeah, exactly, nah. Figgy. Every logo.
Expanded past that brand. It's it's already been established. Now he's Hollywood. He's big time. He's got to let it go. He's got to fill that gap.
You gotta have the gap.
It ain't no Hollywood dude with a gap now.
Well,
he blend in with everybody else.
Fine. Yeah. Okay with it.
I thought that was a big mistake.
Didn't hate it as much as you. Mm-hmm. Also, don't hate Chris Beard being the next coach at the University of Texas. He leaves Texas Tech for Texas. I think it only cost him about $4 million on the buyout.
Made him $1 million.
Not sure how that happens, but
it was $5 million yesterday. $4 million this morning was the buyout. So by stringing it along until this morning, he saved whatever booster or school money that was, he saved him $1 million. He knew he was going to get this job a month ago, probably.
I think he probably knew it a year ago, yeah. But, you know, to each his own. Shout out to Chris Beard. We'll see what happens.
How bad was it for Texas Tech to give him just a $4 million buyout?
It was a nice run.
Are you patting him on the head?
Nice run. Nice effort. Landry Locker, John Lopez, Figgy Fig with you here on Houston Sports Leader, Sports Radio 610. Deshaun Watson, he is getting, or at least his legal team is getting aggressive. What a day to be alive. More of the same and a little something new. The return of the Whoopi next.
Baseball is in full swing. NBA playoffs are heating up, and your NFL team is gearing up for training camp. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.